Blog Talk Radio.
If there's ever been a more poignant or riveting time in the history of Masonic effects, we certainly never expected that everybody within the listening audience would be affected by an invisible, an all but invisible threat. But it is what it is. Not to be ignored. Stoically, life does go on. For those of you who are sick, our good thoughts are with you, but more importantly, during your time, whether it's final or not, a lot of people are infected, but they're not. It's not mortal. And use your time constructively, and don't think of it as a distraction. Use it with purpose. Your mind is still working. You're still reasoning. Oh, the unpleasantness of the mathematics, the probabilities that swirl around us each and every day. Always with that hint in the background, that wishing, the hopefulness, a God as a Santa Claus. If I wish good things and pray, my desires will be answered. And yet, life is a little more serious than that. Why, every day, there's not been a moment when you've drawn breath that has been less serious or more serious mathematically. The probabilities, well, we know them. Do we understand them? We've had massive extinctions. Scientists have shown us that. And we know that there's a likelihood we'll move toward another, further, the fifth extinction. But I don't know if that's necessarily the grounds for a cause and effect for a dystopian view of the world. I don't think so. I think that's a matter of choice. Yes, in hundreds of, I should be less cavalier about it, hundreds of billions of years from now, our star will extinguish, will it actually implode, will evolve. It won't be giving us the energy anymore. We're already sending a primitive little spacecraft out searching for, something that right now strikes us as science fiction, because we repopulate. Well, as we get closer to that, maybe in a billion years, we'll get a step closer to that, and maybe that's what will be accomplished. We seem limited only by imagination. The things that were science fiction when I was a boy are purchased in across the counter. The telephone that we have in our pocket has more computing capacity than that used to launch spacecraft to the moon. Not to say that the time is less important. We should be concerned, but be vigilant. Use the science to your advantage to protect yourself. The jungle is a beautiful place, but it also contains danger. We equip our children, some, I suppose, by locking them away, but most of us by teaching them the risks, what to avoid and how to avoid it, how to mitigate or reduce the risk. Today we have a good program. Something, when I say good, I think it's something worth your attention. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be taking advantage of your precious time. Around the world, I know it sounds like a cliche, hopes and prayers, blah, blah, blah. But you know what I mean, brethren. Whether you're in Ghana or Australia or Japan, we're in this together, truly. And when I speak to Masonic Effects, the audience is global. It's a community. Imagine that. We're part and parcel of something that was just a fantasy back in the 50s and 60s, this global community. Oh, we did have wise people talking about humanity as one. Ah, there you go. Freemasonry is that application of those ideas. We look for the similarities, but oh, we look for them in that ideal, but we still need to overcome the practical issues day by day. I envy in so many ways those of you who enjoy the company in the lodge, where you know it's a respite, where it's sanctuary, it's harmony. I want to encourage those who are still dealing with the pettiness of men to focus on the goal. The ideal is achievable. The harmony, learning to walk away, learning to, in your mind, you have moves to make. It's consequences of the things that happen around you. Oh, don't be deceitful to yourself. Be true to yourself, to your values. Masonry won't fail you. The lodge grouping, the chemistry might be going through some difficulty and challenge. We'll talk about that a bit later today. There's never been a doubt in my mind that Freemasonry is about change, about revealing a man, revealing to himself hidden capacities that even he was unaware. There's no use, no benefit talking about what should be. We should be encouraging one another. We should be building environments and atmospheres that focus on enriching the spirit and the mind. So we have those, you know that. We have those. But think of the rest. The landscape is a work in progress. Be optimistic. Good, a good commentary today, completing the picture, the art of building foundations. I think it's, I think you'll like it. And the poetry, Alexander Pushkin, the spring. Man, he was exiled. He was, and even when he was back in the country in Russia, he was still censored. Interesting guy. You'd like to think that the poet would be uplifting, spring, but this fellow did not like mud. Spring. Some beautiful music here. We're going to start it off with Bill Evans. This is one of his more popular Waltz for Debbie. You'll know it. Thank you. that'll do. That'll do. Completing the picture. The art of building foundations. I hope you'll not think harshly of me for putting out articles like this. It's not an act of superior judgment, no. It's part of a dialogue. And the other part, the valuable part, is what you fill in. We start the conversation, even in, certainly in your own thoughts, as listening to other people and reading opinions, I learn to, whether something is conjecture, I don't have much interest anymore, but I do like reasoned arguments and debates. Arguments, not the dominance, not that muscular nonsense, but that the discussion that probes the differences of opinion between men as a way of pressing one another to illustrate their idea more fully. In other words, through discussion and debate, the advantage, you must certainly be aware, the advantage of a brotherhood is that we get to share and discuss our ideas with other people. It enriches our own experience. It teaches us more about ourselves. And in fact, when you think about it, I think this is quite factual and not just opinion or fanciful, that if we understand your reasoning, if I understand your reasoning, and we can learn to press each other as gentlemen without losing control of our emotion, like, oh my goodness, then the more I understand about your opinion, the clearer my own becomes in my mind. It means that listening, it becomes really a skill, that a productive skill, something that when we're sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, when will he stop so that I can interject? It's different than thinking, tell me your ideas, illustrate them, because it's enriching my own. Completing the picture, always complete the picture. What have we done with our best intentions? Today, the entire ethos of Freemasonry has been locked away, ignored, while a large number of older senior Masons do what old men always do, reminisce. From the start, our focus was to establish lodges and build a network extending Masonry throughout 1 million square kilometers, now called Ontario. The templates handed to us were made with history unique to other hands, to other lands, without warnings or caveats. To gain traction, we modified criteria. The very definition of a true Mason took out provision of purpose and emphasized friendship and kindliness. Lacking a fuller understanding, we were encouraged to focus on being called a Mason. Qualifiers and challenges enabling a man to prove his worth were removed from the conversation. The formula worked so successfully that our number exploded until our own state of incompletion visited us following the World War II. Around the world, Masonry is experiencing similar outcomes. Expecting students of the Frontier Development Plan to come up with a new plan to meet current need is fraught. It is asking these men to detach from something they hold true and dear. It's asking too much. As we tread water, we lost relevancy. Far from being ahead of trends, timid, self-conscious decision-making failed us. So I ask, how does a man ever learn to prove is worth to himself that Freemasonry in Upper Canada has withdrawn the opportunity to find the truth about himself. How can we expect men who are proud to call themselves a Mason to take on the work of becoming a Mason? We can't. Freemasonry moves on, hidden in this pastiche. Insightful Masons are in the minority. They won't win popular votes, yet they are the guarantee that validation is found within, and that is where we take the path less trodden. Success is what others say about a man, not what he thinks of himself, self-absorbed and boring as hell. So step up. Together. Thank you. Sims. Suddenly it's spring. Look forward to something even when we have this calamity encroaching. I want to ask you your opinion about something. I hope most of you are familiar, at least with, in a passing way, with the work of Sigmund Freud. There had been attempts over the millennium to explain the workings of the human mind, and we see small disconnected phrases and ideas and that delight us because they've been validated later on, but nothing quite as comprehensive as the work of Freud. A theory. We had to come up with theory. We didn't have some of the equipment that we use today to validate brain activity, let alone what that content is about. Here, something that caught my fancy this week. Sigmund Freud has said that the belief that the universe is purposive stands or falls with the religious system. I don't think he was making that comment as a declaration, but as something descriptive. It made me sit back. What does it do to you? The purposive nature of the universe rests with the religious system. I'm having difficulty with that for a lot of reasons. This is true, and nothing in the loss of religious belief was more painful than to be required to regard the universe as being without purpose. I often wonder if the person that made that comment was being rash. To say that we remove superstition from our thinking, and to suggest that everything else is without purpose, it seems reckless. It means a rethink. I can understand that. But to suggest the superstition and the religiosity is the source of all purpose, and without those stories or mythology or the satisfactions, the comforts and challenges of zealots, to suggest that removing that there's an emptiness, it only, to my mind, suggests that those versions of purpose are moving aside for another way of thinking. And we know that major religions don't. They don't move aside. They linger. They remain. Science is a different kind of validation, isn't it? I guess you could say, you could take a literal translation, as we often find people do with scripture, or we could take a more metaphorical analysis approach and enrich the mind, which, as you can tell from my bias, is the inclination here, which is to say, without purpose, it's without coherence, without meaning. When that happened, it might seem that the very foundation of the mind had been shaken, that reason was threatened with overthrow. It was thus that the poet Carlyle experienced his discovery of the purposefulness, purposelessness of the universe. His despair brought him to the verge of insanity, as did Tennyson's in a like situation. The dark night of nihilism was a common event in the lives of thoughtful men of the 19th century. And yet the Victorians did not easily surrender their hope of shoring up their faith in the purposiveness of the universe after the religious system had fallen. Carlyle, by an impassioned exercise of will, discovered the open secret that the universe, despite all appearances to the contrary, was a spiritual entity, by which he meant that it was capable of having an intention to which man was implicated. In his work In Memoriam, Tennyson struggled with the bleakness of nihilism, into which his perception of the manifest fortuitousness of life had cast him, and reached a faith in an inherent universal purpose. All that Matthew Arnold permitted to be postulated of God was a certain, alas, not very decisive, tendency toward the establishment of moral good. God, he said, is the power, not ourselves, that makes for righteousness. And although science seemed ever more strictly to deny that the attributes of spirit were to be found in the universe, there was one scientific development which might be thought ambiguous in this respect: the idea of evolution, which was current and influential long before the publication of Darwin's Origin of Species in 1859, dramatized and popularized it, did, of course, contribute to the doubt that man had his origins in and his nature from the special purpose of a divine creator. But at the same time, it licensed the speculation that the universe was not wholly accidental, that in the development of forms of life from simplicity to complexity, from lower to higher, there was manifested an inherent end in view, presumably beneficent. In the late years of the 19th century, that speculation was formulated notably by the French philosopher Henri Bergson on the idea of a goal-directed life force. It gained a certain currency among the educated classes, and in the early years of the 20th century, it was popularized by the writings of H.G. Wells and Bernard Shaw. The implication was that the life force had the attributes of spirit, and that it might even be thought of as divine. It was an idea too abstract to win authority over either the heart or the mind. Alexander Pushkin, the poet. He died pretty young. 29th of January, 1837. He's today considered his country's greatest poet and the founder of modern Russian literature. We've visited his work a few times over the years. But a little bit about his background. His father came from an old boyar family. That was, think of that as the gentry. But at the time, there had been a change. By the end of the 15th century, boyar membership had declined. And merit, rather than belonging to the family, decided who became a boyar. A little Masonic kind of a tincture in that. It's not just being born into a family. We give a reward for somebody being born. I don't certainly follow it. If you're going to need to give out an award for something with all the rather profound statements about merit, one would think that we would do away with the birth and be focused on merit. This is the makings of Pushkin. You judge for yourself, I suppose. Did he earn to be referred to as a boyar? Did he? He ran afoul, his ideas ran afoul of the government, and he was exiled. And then when he was allowed back, he was censored heavily. He was only 37 when he died. But I'm going to share with you, he's an interesting guy. You know, you and I are walking down the path, and it's spring outside. And what are we looking at? We're looking at the renewal. Maybe we've got our collar pulled up tight as there's a stray chill to the wind, but the sun is out and it warms us. And yet we might have overlooked all of these impediments because we have been locked away and fighting off winter. And yet here, this is a fellow with a, I don't know, bit of a sense of humor, or like, you know, there's a frankness about this. I'll share this with you. The spring, you bring love's flood. How hard for me your apparition. What listless and yet crazed condition afflicts my soul and taints my blood. Unknown to heart is joy's ignition, and all that joys and swells to bud brings yawn and sloth by definition. So give me storm and icy blizzard, long winter filled with inky nights. So we lean over and say to him, he found the muddy thaw, most depressing time of year. Alex, get with the program, buddy. What are you thinking? He was frustrated. All that muck. Give me that harsh, cold, crunchy snow, that winter condition, anytime compared to this. My family and I often noticed that. We lived up in Yellowknife, up in the Arctic for a while. Spring was short. Went from cold to hot instantly. Everything just melted. 10 days tops. No muck, no cloud, no fog, just winter, summer, nice and clear. I think Mr. Pushkin would have liked it. Put that into some context with your own experience. When you look at it, you see both. You see, the muck. I don't. And yet, do you celebrate? You also give yourself that opportunity to realize that these balancing forces, these balancing elements that happen in the mind. It's a choice. Which is healthier for you? Which is healthier? Which is healthier for other people? Being bleak, well, look what happens when you hear news. It's constant. news of the encroachment, the effects of the virus, and governments trying to push a statistical model. Now, you and I, you know, when you took statistics in grad school, we were taught to look at the math for ourselves. Don't be buying the assumptions in a model without breaking it down. We don't know what the level of probability was that, you know, you take these beautiful graphs and they're meaningless given the probability is like negligible. But if there's a strong probability, that's something significant. So we just shouldn't probably be lapping this stuff up without looking at the math. We want to know if the people are being, you know, subscribing to a political agenda of optimism. Everything's calculable and it's safer because we know about it and we can measure it. That's one thing, we can put it into account. But if you're the type of person that needs to face what's going on by understanding what's going on without having it filtered or censored by somebody else, if you're not prone to artificial intelligence curating your news, then these models just don't work. Look for the math. Look for the math. Break it down. I know. Here. You start to think that way, it's a lonely street you walk. This is Count Basie. This tune with the same name, Lonely Street. Always context, eh? Always context. Count Basie, brother Count Basie, by the way. We we're part of such a beautiful organization. The thought palace that we walk into as Freemasonry enables us to explore different dimensions of it for ourselves. These notion of veils and hidden secrets, it depends on whether we do the work. If we do the work, we begin to learn things. We begin to join the dots. There's a precision to it. And it's, I don't know if I'd say uncanny, but it's unusual. Let's put it that way. It's uncommon, which is everything Masonic. So a good rule of thumb, when something seems to be commonplace, we've lost the plot. Then and it brings me back to, after taking so much time to invest in understanding symbolism, at a different level, not the superficiality of something put out to a lodge without the discussion, but a deeper discussion, dialogue. The foundation of Masonry, at least that's what we subscribe to here. I'm going to talk to you, pick up where we left off with Margaret Jacob's work on the birth of modern civil society. It has a bearing. So what was his name, that Spanish-American philosopher that said, if you don't understand your history, you don't understand where you came from, you won't understand where you're going. Santoya, I think. There were some very strong words in the Masonic defense and justification, freedom versus slavery, innocence contrasted to vanity and self-interest. Ah, got your attention, didn't it? Certainly when we've been talking about ego and, you know, giving awards because somebody's born, really? The implications of such language, had anyone wanted to draw them out, were subversive indeed. But the Masonic approach towards state power being proposed here was to turn inward toward self-reform, toward virtue, and most important, toward reason. Public self-defense, even under the pain of being punished, must also occur. But the real work of the Freemason should mean that in his presence, everything changes. All things in the universe are renewed and reformed. Order is established. The rule and measure of things is understood. Duty is followed. Reason listened to, wisdom comprehended, and mortals, without changing their essence, appear as new men. In short, these new men are self-disciplined as well as charitable toward one another. And their new ethics come from their recently discovered idealism as embodied in their dedication to Freemasonry. The implications of finding one's morality in secular fraternizing and the laws proclaimed through sociability might not augur well for the religious institutions traditionally in charge of establishing the laws and rules of ethical and, not least, charitable conduct. But what about the implications for the state? Did the secular authorities, in fact, have anything to worry about? On this rather crucial point, the Freemasons sought in this early tract to reassure. They did so by explaining their understanding of civic virtue and their own role in the Republic. First, they explained that they had a role. Indeed, they speculated about why it was that only men of certain occupations and professions, which they claimed are in fact of little use to the Republic, nevertheless receive most of the esteem and respect. The real heroes and wise men, the Freemasons explained, are of two kinds. Those who brave all hazard, including death, to defend their fellow citizens, to avenge the injuries of the nation, and thus to extend the boundaries of the empire. Les sages make the laws. Of course, the two are completely compatible. a great legislator and a great warrior gives the Republic the equal advantage of laws and arms. And then comes the message. True Masons are heroes and sages. They're heroes and sages. In addition, they believe in God and are faithful to the prince. The true prince, in turn, is the father of his people. He is good and just. The only problem with this statement is the True Mason's political role in the state is that it is being prescribed for men as diverse and humble as gardeners, Negro trumpeters, and small merchants. Within the political vocabularies of the 18th century, the prescription was essentially, if vaguely, Republican. The appeal, written in wartime, was also nationalist, possibly because among the few things such men had in common as they met in their new and exotic society was their Frenchness. In the words of the Grand Master of 1740, the Order of Freemasons exists to form men, agreeable men, good citizens, good subjects, to form in the course of time a totally spiritual nation, where, without denigrating from the various duties required by different states or conditions, one nevertheless creates a new people. Thank you. Time to pull this together for another week. Thank you for tuning in. I won't give you the usual bromides here. We're facing something that the smart kids knew would be coming, but day by day, we don't live probabilities, we live real life. No sense hiding behind the curtains. Life is out there. Now, it's important that we develop a skill to be content with what we have and where we are. If you're constantly comparing it to that poncy little notion that you have in mind of what you deserve or what should be going on, step back for a second. Think about it. You're part of the craft. Your development, if you think that the ideas that we're talking about, by what Margaret Jacobs is talking about, is going to come to you by some instruction by a Grand Lodge, you're probably going to be waiting for a great long time. The idea of merit is what you demonstrate. You demonstrate a state of mind. It's the state of mind, that openness to challenge yourself and your own thinking. Then the treasure of Freemasonry is open to you. You can absorb the information by many different formats now, either from online or from books and pamphlets. You can study at your leisure the different fields that are curious to you, but you organize them, try to organize them in your own thinking. It's not just a random field. There is a mathematics, there's a geometry to all of this. Do you need to discover it? Well, yeah. Who taught you, who did your calculus for you? Was it somebody that did the thing? Who did your mathematics for you? Eventually you did the reasoning for yourself. Who taught you language? Somebody else talking for you and thinking for you? Is not you, it's somebody else. Masonry, similar. No competition. So when you see all these pins and bars and things that are presented to people because of they were born, don't think harshly of yourself. It doesn't make any sense. But when you're in a frontier mentality, of course you're clinging to any kind of history. It gives a validity to operations to do that. It always has. So we're no different. Except now we have an opportunity to rethink. And what better? Don't have the choice, do we? We can fritter it away idly, or we can use it purposefully. And I would suggest, gentlemen, that you use your time with purpose to study. And if it's difficult, well, yeah, probably is. And if the ideas are challenging, wonderful, just wonderful. We're part of a global way of approaching life. And I don't know if it gets any better than this. commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. You be clever in your pursuit. Be mindful of the risk around. Oh, if you have to assert yourself over the common good, nothing need more be said about that. Stop it. I look forward to being back with you in a few days. And in the meantime, share your experience here. Hopefully it's informative and entertaining. Share it with your Masonic connections. Look out for each other. See you later.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly see, and I seem to find the happiness I see. When we're out together, dance cheek to cheek, here's heaven, I'm in heaven. And the kids that hung around me through the week seems to vanish like a gambler, like a shriek. When we out together, dance cheek to cheek. Oh, I'd love to climb to mountains, reach the highest peak, but it doesn't thrill me half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I'd love to go out fishing in a river or a creek, but I don't enjoy it half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Now, mama, dance with me. I want my arms about you, to charms about you, will carry me through. Is heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly see, and I seem to find the happiness I see. When we out together, dance cheek to cheek, hey, let us sing it.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly see, and I seem to find the happiness I see. When we're out together, dancing cheek to cheek. Heaven, I'm in heaven, and the care that hung around me through the week seems to vanish like a gambler's lucky streak. When we're out together, dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I love to climb a mountain and to reach the highest peak, but it doesn't really have as much as dancing cheek to cheek.